They don't talk about over 50% of the federal budget goes to empire. It goes to the bloated military budget, which drains away all kinds of support for the necessities of the American people back home. They don't talk about the corporate crime wave that even the mainstream press is reporting. Insurance companies, banks, drug companies, oil companies. They don't talk about the huge amount of corporate welfare. You know, they're into poor, the way they go after programs that help the poor. But the corporate welfare kings are making out like bandits with very little congressional oversight. So one area after another. I mean, one would think, for example, 5,000 Americans dying every week from what Johns Hopkins Medical Report said are, quote, preventable problems in hospitals, end quote. That's 5,000 Americans a week, 250,000 a year. And the doctors who put this report out a few years ago said that nothing is really being done about it by the federal government, and that was their most conservative estimate. $1 billion a day is being ripped off from health care programs by corporate crime, and $60 billion ripoff of Medicare alone. How inflationary is that? I mean, the areas that they avoid because of their paymasters and who they raise money from is really pretty extraordinary. But the real problem, Amy, is that where are the people protesting here? You would think they're about to be cut off from all kinds of critical federal programs with the shutdown on Saturday midnight. And there are no demonstrations in the districts of these dozen or so right-wing Republicans, North Carolina, Arizona, Georgia. And where is the Democratic Party in these districts? They're not challenging these members who are getting a free ride. One guy from Virginia, Congressman Good, just bragged that he only got one call criticizing his threat to shut down the government, and he's getting all kinds of supporting calls against federal spending. Well, that's because there's no Democratic Party activity. They're giving them a free ride. So we're seeing terrible situations here that are not being discussed or debated. And part of it is because Fox News doesn't ask those basic questions at all. They don't ask about the crumbling democracy, the empire all over the world. What are we doing? All over the world, we expect countries to obey our military dictates. And we have bases in over 100 countries. We're wasting trillions of dollars, and there's no question about that.
Let me go to the issue of global politics. During the debate, former Republican governor of South Carolina, the former U.S. ambassador to the U.N., Nikki Haley, went on the offensive, attacking her rival, Vivek Ramaswamy, over his stance on TikTok.
This is infuriating because TikTok is one of the most dangerous social media apps that we could have. And what you've got, I honestly, every time I hear you, I feel a little bit dumber for what you say. Because I can't believe that here you've got a TikTok situation. What they're doing is these 150 million people are on TikTok. That means they can get your contacts, they can get your financial information, they can get your emails, they can get text messages, they can get all of these things.
This is very important for our party.
Exactly what they're doing.
Very important
and what
for our
we've
party,
seen
and I'm
is
say
you've
it.
Gone and you've we helped China stop. Build make medicines will, in China, not America.
Me, excuse
you are
me.
Now wanting kids to go and get on the social media that's dangerous for all of us. You went and you were in business with the Chinese that gave Hunter Biden $5 million. We can't trust you. We
so
can't
let me,
trust you.
Let
we
me
can't
say
have
something.
TikTok
that
in
I
our
think
kids'
that
lives.
We need to ban
Mr. Ramaswamy, you have 15 seconds.
I think, excuse me.
You have 15 seconds, Mr. Ramaswamy.
Thank you. I think we would be better served as a Republican Party if we're not sitting here hurling personal insults and actually have a legitimate debate about policy following Reagan's 11th Amendment in his honor. And the answer is that is what actually makes our country strong. And I believe in these people. These are good people on the stage. They disagree, but let's have a legitimate disagreement.
someone did tweet something along the lines of, if I could ever find someone to love as much as Nikki Haley hates Vivek Ramaswamy, I'll be a happy man. Ralph Nader, your response.
Well, generally, her criticism of social media and what it does to kids is correct. She's picking out TikTok because it's Chinese-owned, but it could be Facebook, it could be Instagram, it could be any one of these wardens of the internet gulag that's got our kids hooked through that iPhone 5 to 7 hours a day, separating them from their parents, community, nature, you name it. But they're now wrangling with each other. They're trying to break out to see who's going to be number two or number three in the polls up against Trump. That's what's causing that back and forth. It's really interesting. I mean, you have millions and millions of people who are not making a living wage. They don't even mention that the federal minimum wage is $7.25 an hour, frozen since 2009. Or even earlier, they don't even mention it. They don't mention occupational health and safety. They don't mention that tens of millions of people are without health insurance or underinsured, and that at least 100,000 people, 2,000 a week in this country, die because they can't afford health insurance to get diagnosed and treated in time. So, you know, it's just a lot of wrangling back and forth, and a lot of it is the debate format and the kind of questions that are asked.
Were you surprised, Ralph Nader, by the Fox host Varney asking something we played before? Together, the CEOs of General Motors, Ford and Stellantis made 336 times the number of rank, the number of rank and file workers. That's just part of a wider income inequality trend in the country. This issue of wealth inequality, has it gotten even Fox is addressing it, just too big to ignore? Or that's because what Murdoch has said he's retiring?
Well, it is too big to ignore, but it keeps going on and on. Years ago, Fortune magazine had on its cover, CEO pays out of control and why nothing can be done to stop it. Well, that's because the shareholders or the owners of these companies are rendered completely powerless. The hired hands in executive suite have even made the owners of their capitalist corporation powerless. How about that one? Well, Mary Barra makes $29 million a year as CEO of General Motors, $29 million. Now, that is at least on a 40-hour week, over $14,000 an hour. And she's got low-tier workers in the auto industry working for $18, $20, $22 an hour. So that's the kind of gap. You got to reduce it down to the hour. Over $14,000 an hour after hour, 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, not counting extraordinary benefits and perks. The CEOs of the big auto companies used to restrain themselves because the auto workers were strong enough as a union not to tolerate it, and they didn't want to give the auto workers an excuse. Now, all limits are gone, and it's very good that the new head of the United Auto Workers, Sean Thain, he is taking them on and calling them out with great specificity. He's talking like an old-time fighting labor leader, and the auto workers ought to be glad that they're finally led by someone who's going to draw the line, because the auto workers have been pushed down for years, especially after the GM bankruptcy and the $30 billion-plus federal bailout in 2012 under Obama. The workers have to take all kinds of concessions. So it's not that they're breaking new ground here. They're catching up on past deprivations.
Let me ask you about the issue of covering Trump, right? Trump wasn't there last night. He was in Detroit speaking to in a non-union hall, speaking separately from those in Simi Valley at the Ronald Reagan Library. How do you think the media should be covering Trump right now, moving into the 2024 elections now with over 90 indictments, 90 charges against him in however many cases? The most recent judge that came out against him two nights ago could dissolve the Trump Organization.
Well, it should cover his criminal activity, his unconstitutional record as president, his serial violation of federal criminal statutes like the Hatch Act, the Anti-Deficiency Act. He used the White House loan for political campaigning, which is a criminal violation. And the press didn't even cover it, except for Joe Davidson of the Washington Post, following our letter to the Justice Department. Now, the New York Times does something that is really extraordinary. They put the quotes of Trump in capital letters when he puts it in capital letters on his website. I mean, how far do you go in trumpeting Trump? And what they should do is apply newsworthy standards. If he says the same thing every day on the hustings, you don't report that every day. Margaret Sullivan, the media critic recently, the Washington Post, she's retired. She wrote a long essay telling the media how not to cover Trump. And they still fall for it because of the ratings. He's got them by the finger. And if it continues this way, he's going to benefit from billions of dollars of free publicity. And the more outrageous he is, the more he lies, the more he creates fantasies instead of realities, the more he engages in false promises, the more he tries to cover up his crimes, the more attention he gets.
Let me ask you something, Ralph Nader. Some critics, including Lawrence Tribe, tweeted in June, WTF, does Cornel West really want to help the GOP nominee win the way Ralph Nader helped G.W. Bush defeat Al Gore in 2000? Ego trips can come at a heavy price, Cornel. Please stop this foolishness before you really hurt the things you care about. Can you respond to this, Ralph, as you were brought into it, but then also talk about what you're feeling about President Biden right now?
Well, this is the worst performance by Larry Tribe. He is a leading constitutional law expert. He should know what the First Amendment is all about. When you run for office, you are running in the right of the First Amendment, the right of free speech, a petition, assembly. And he should say, well, I don't like these candidates and I'm opposing them, but I'm not going to oppose their right to run. I mean, he flew down to Florida in 2004 in a court trying to get me off the ballot, which is basically saying, shut up, do not exercise your right of free speech. This is a constitutional law professor at Harvard Law School, my alma mater. Teresa Amato had to go down and oppose him, and she blocked it, our campaign director. So he's got a real tick on third parties. He doesn't understand. The way the Democrats should deal with progressive third parties is to adopt their popular agenda. That's what Harry Truman did to Henry Wallace in 1948. He took some of Henry Wallace's progressive agenda, and Henry Wallace started dropping in the polls. That's what a competitive democracy is all about. Instead, the Democratic Party, with the help of Larry Tribe, is scapegoating. Every time they lose to the worst Republican Party in history, they blame the Greens. And they're just scapegoating. The Democratic Party does not look at itself in the mirror. It's very low on introspection. And doesn't ask itself why, against the most corrupt, dictatorial, corporate indentured, you name it, Republican Party, that they're not landsliding him. And if they win, they barely win, and they don't have a workable majority in the Congress. And if they lose, they lose to the worst party. I mean, people like Teddy Roosevelt and Eisenhower and Senator Robert Taft, they couldn't believe how bad the Republican Party is. And the Democrats are barely competing.
We have just 30 seconds,
Ralph. Same dollars.
But I wanted to get your response. You were just profiled in the Washington Post. I think the headline was Ralph Nader, wary of Trump, offers to help Joe Biden win. Is that accurate?
It's an inaccurate headline, which the reporter has nothing to do with. What I said was that in a choice between Trumpster fascism or Democratic Party autocracy, I'll take autocracy because it allows an opportunity for a reversal. Fascism and the violent rhetoric and behavior and voter suppression of the Trumpsters, and they're just getting underway while they let Wall Street do whatever it wants. They deregulate everything, the health and safety and economic protection programs for the American people. They give tax escapes, so big corporations now are making money in the U.S. and paying virtually no taxes, a whole list of them. It's the perfect corporate state that Franklin Delano Roosevelt warned about in a message to Congress in 1938. He said, when private power takes over government, that's fascism. And so that's what we're dealt with, the two-party duopoly. I'm all for third parties. I wish the Green Party well. Cornel West is by far the most progressive candidate. He's got the most complete progressive agenda in domestic and foreign policy, and let's have a competitive democracy and stop engaging in candidate suppression. The Democrats criticize the GOP for voter suppression. The Democrats are very good about candidate suppression, third-party candidates, bumping them off ballots, harassing them, suing them. We got sued a dozen times in a few weeks.
Well, Ralph, we're going to have to leave it there today, but of course, we're going to continue to cover so many of these issues. Ralph Nader, longtime consumer advocate, corporate critic, former presidential candidate four times. He's also the founder of the Capitol Hill Citizen newspaper, which has a new issue out. Ralph's the author of many books, including his forthcoming The Rebellious CEO. Coming up, we'll speak to David Dayan of the American Prospect about the U.S. government's landmark lawsuit against Amazon and the growing calls for Senator Bob Menendez to resign after he was indicted for bribery. Also, the possible shutdown of the U.S. government. Stay with us.
It's knowing that your door is always open and your path is free to walk. That makes me tend to leave my sleeping bag rolled up and stashed behind your couch. It's knowing I'm not shackled by forgotten words and bonds and the ink stains that are dried upon some line that keeps you on the back roads by the rivers of my memory and keeps you ever gentle on my mind. It's not clinging to the rocks and ivy planted on their columns now that binds me.
Gentle on My Mind by Billy Bragg and Joe Henry. This is Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. On Tuesday, the Federal Trade Commission in 17 states filed a sweeping antitrust lawsuit against Amazon. The lawsuit accuses the company of using, quote, punitive and coercive tactics to unlawfully maintain its monopolies, unquote, allowing it to charge higher prices, harming customers and weakening competition. The lawsuit was spearheaded by FTC Chair Lina Khan, who made headlines as a law student in 2017 after she wrote a widely read scholarly article arguing for the breakup of Amazon. For more, we're joined by David Dayan, executive editor of the American Prospect. He wrote about this in his recent piece, Amazon's $185 billion pay-to-play system. His latest book is titled Monopolized, Life in the Age of Corporate Power. David, why don't we start off, and thanks for coming back today, by talking about the significance of this lawsuit, which comes just 2 weeks after the opening of a landmark antitrust trial against Google.
Yes, suddenly there is all this activity in the antitrust space after a period of dormancy for about 40 years. The specifically the Google trial is the first in 25 years, first monopolization trial. It's not a trial to fight a merger. It's just saying that this company is using anti-competitive behavior in ways that violates the law. This is the same thing in the Amazon case. It's a monopolization case. And yes, as you say, it alleges that third-party sellers that use Amazon's network are coerced into using all sorts of services that Amazon provides, for which they take this huge cut. About according to the report that I discussed last week, about 45% of all third-party sales go to Amazon in fees. Those fees are for logistics, something called Fulfillment by Amazon, which is their shipping and warehousing networks, and also for advertising, which are basically, if you use Amazon search these days, pretty much the entire first page is ads. They may not be the cheapest thing or the most useful product or the most quality product, but it's things that the third-party sellers have to pay for to get into the consciousness of people who are searching for products. So there are a variety of ways in which third-party sellers are induced to use these services to pay Amazon. And also there's a sort of anti-discounting measure whereby if you are selling on Amazon, you can't sell your products for a lower price on other websites. And because Amazon controls 70, 80% of all online commerce, you have to be at Amazon because the eyeballs are there. But basically through an algorithm, Amazon crawls the web, sees if you're selling the same product for less elsewhere. And if you are, downvotes you in the search so that you can't essentially be seen by Amazon's customers, and thereby you can't sell anything there. So this arrangement raises prices across the internet and forces these sellers to sell for more money.
David, I wanted to play FTC chair, that's the Federal Trade Commission chair, Lina Khan, in her own words, speaking on CBS in June about the Biden administration's antitrust efforts.
When you have open markets, you want them to be contestable, which means that the existing giants have to be susceptible to competition. There are a whole set of antitrust lawsuits underway right now that allege that some of these companies have engaged in anti-competitive tactics that have unfairly blocked competition.
So, David Dayan, if you can talk about Lina Khan herself, a lot of corporate Democrats want Biden to take her out. She's the FTC chair.
Yeah, she, as you mentioned, wrote this very celebrated Law Review article about Amazon itself. Of course, the company has said that she is now biased because she believes in enforcing the laws it's written. And they're trying to throw her out of the case, much as they've tried to throw Jonathan Cantor, the head of the antitrust division, out of the Google case because of remarks he's made in the past. Fortunately, judges have ruled that there is no need for recusal here. Khan represents an aggressive set of antitrust enforcers that the Biden administration has put in and really reversed this troubling trend of the last 40 years, to the extent that even Republicans, some Republicans, are moving in that direction. I'll mention that the Google case was actually filed during the tail end of the Trump administration. And this case against Amazon has been in the works at the FTC for 4 years. So it did, the investigation at least started under Trump's antitrust Federal Trade Commission, I should say. But clearly, both Lina Khan, Jonathan Cantor, Tim Wu, who was the former Biden administration antitrust chair, they have all been instrumental in this newfound vigor in antitrust.
And of course, Jeff Bezos, we're just showing images right now of the CEO of Amazon, Jeff Bezos.
Former CEO, but yes.
Yes. Can you Can we switch gears right now to talk about what's happening in Congress? I want to ask you about the growing calls for Senator Bob Menendez to resign after being indicted with his wife on federal bribery and extortion charges. He was indicted Friday, accused of using his position to increase U.S. assistance to Egypt and to do favors for New Jersey businessmen in exchange for mortgage payments, a luxury car, bars of gold, thousands of dollars in cash. Second time in under a decade, Menendez has been indicted on federal bribery and corruption charges. He's now what we're up to, something like 30 fellow Democrats, including his fellow Democratic senator from New Jersey, Cory Booker, demanding that he resign. He made his first court appearance on Wednesday and pleaded not guilty. Your piece is Breaking the Menendez Cycle. Talk about what you mean.
Yeah. So what happened in 2016, Menendez gets indicted. At the end of the Obama administration, he goes to trial. And because the Supreme Court has so defined down public corruption and bribery, that case ends in a mistrial and the Justice Department ultimately drops the charges. However, it was clear that there was a lot unseemly going on in that first case, very similar in terms of taking trips and getting gifts and things like that in exchange for some actions on behalf of the individual who was alleged to have bribed him. Despite the fact that the Senate Ethics Committee wrote a report that admonished him, said he failed to disclose these gifts, that violated the law, Democrats allowed Menendez to get back into that ranking position on the Foreign Relations Committee, where he was in a position to help with military aid, with arms sales to the Egyptian government. And literally right after he is restored to that seat, another set of scandals begins. This cycle returns itself as he starts engaging in these activities on behalf of that certainly help Egypt in exchange for all these additional gifts. What I meant by breaking the cycle is the fact that in New Jersey, where it's kind of a political machine, the machine bosses, most and now pretty much all of the leading Democratic politicians there have rejected Menendez. They've said he should resign. Andy Kim, who's a congressman right now, has already signed up to run against him in next June's Senate primary because Menendez is up for re-election.
And also, so this is an Larry attempt Hamm, to break the Larry cycle. Hamm has said that he's going to run as well, the well-known New Jersey community activist head of POP.
Interesting. So there is this sort of a shunning of Menendez within New Jersey, which is his power base. And so there's a possibility that this cycle that we see will not recur. But he's apparently speaking to the heads, to members of the Senate today in their caucus meeting, and it'll be interesting to see what comes out of that.
Mm-hmm. And what this could mean for the balance of the Senate next year if he hangs on.
Well, certainly, because, you know, in 2018, when he ran against someone who had no money and no name recognition within New Jersey in the primary, he still got only about 60% of the vote. So there's clearly a large number of people within New Jersey who aren't that interested in Menendez. And the Democratic Senate arm had to spend about $7 million to ensure that he won the general election.
David, we only have about a minute to go, and I do want to get to the possible, do you say probable, shutdown and what exactly this means.
The definite shutdown, it's going to happen. There's a solution readily available, 77 votes in the Senate for a clean continuing resolution to fund the government. Kevin McCarthy knows it would get 350, maybe 400 votes in the House, doesn't want to do it because the small faction of Freedom Caucus members would then try to remove him from the speakership. It's a dysfunctional situation. And I think that McCarthy is looking for somebody else to solve it other than him, even though he's the leader in the House. It's a terrible situation. It's going to affect a lot of federal employees who aren't going to get paid and who are going to get furloughed.
David Dayen, we want to thank you so much for being with us, executive editor of The American Prospect. His latest book, Monopolized, Life in the Age of Corporate Power. We'll also link to your articles at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Produced with Mike Perk, Renee Feldstein, Augusta Messiah Rhodes, Maria Tarasena, Tammy Warnoff, Tarina Nadura. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
Do you like music, or do you like technology, or do you like talking to people? CGSF Radio is the place for you. Here at CGSF, the opportunities are endless. You can interview artists and bands, speak up for what you believe in, or even host your own show, and tons more. To find out more information, visit cgsf.ca.